There's more mystery afoot here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. And we've talked with our next guest a number of times on the phone. It's my first chance meeting her in person. Heather Shoemaker in the studio with me. She is the national speaker. She's the author of several books. It's Okay Not to Share. It's Okay to Go Up the Slide. Saving Arcadia, a story of conservation and community in the Great Lakes. But her latest, as you can tell from the music, is a mystery. And it is a mystery that's aimed at younger readers. It's called The Griffins of Castle Cary. It's a children's mystery. And so we'll talk with her about what it's like to write a book, pen a book for kids, and about the book itself and about her writing. Maybe you'd like to know about writing for children or kids. Well, we'd love to hear from you. Maybe you have a question about the book itself. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Heather Shoemaker, welcome back.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here in person.
Yeah, I tell you what, it is good. We've had so many great conversations. Several of them have wound up being what we call evergreens here at the Ideas Network. And those are interviews that could be heard again at other times. And so you may...
So I live on forever.
You've lived on forever in some of the other books that you've written, and those were books kind of, and I have to tell you also that I've given copies of those other books to in a couple of cases to teachers who I thought would benefit from reading them, and in Saving Arcadia, I gave a copy of your book to another person who works in sort of that same field, and I thought would be quite useful. And she said she found it quite useful. So here you are writing about children. I mean, you've written about raising children.
Right. Now this one is for the children.
Yeah. How did the two genres connect for you?
Well, I've always wanted to write children's fiction, and this is my fourth book, but the first three were for adults, and so this one was so much fun to be able to, it felt like coming home, because I've always wanted to write for that age group, sort of 8 to 12-year-olds. I think at that, I found when I was writing it that I could take bigger ideas and stretch. Because adults, we tend to get in our own little ruts, if you know what I mean. And if you want to bring people a step forward, it takes a little careful stretching. But with kids, they're willing to go anywhere with you if you give them an idea that's interesting.
Yeah, I think you're right. Why'd you set it in England?
Well, I used to live in England when I was a child for a year, went to school there, and I have a lot of British relatives. So some of my earliest memories are visiting my great-grandmother in Somerset, which is where the story is set. So I set it sort of from the family home, but it's funny because, as I said, I went to school there, I lived there, I have a lot of British family, so I thought I was comfortable with that setting. But what I had to do was enlist some British readers to read and make sure I hadn't made any mistakes. And I thought, oh, I know this, I know all the British words for this and that, I know I've lived there. And then I thought they might find maybe two or three mistakes that I'd overlooked. They found 135. So I'm really glad I took that extra research step and got their input.
135?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Were some of those changes just a result of over time, the verbiage changed?
Well, one of them was over time because in that area there's a lot of sheep farming. And I ended up having to consult with a Somerset sheep farmer to understand exactly how my story would work. Because when I was a child, they would mark the sheep. I don't know if you've ever, or your listeners mm-hmm. have traveled there, but a lot of the sheep would have a color on their wool. And as a child, I thought, you know, why is the sheep bleeding? Or why is the sheep painted green or blue? And so my child characters in the book are puzzled by this. But back in the old days, in the 70s or earlier, they did that to keep track of ownership. You know, whose sheep yeah. were mingling the fields. But my readers told me, oh, ever since hoof and mouth disease, you know, we don't let the stock intermingle. And they were telling me all sorts of statutes and things. So I had to change my story to get up to date with the modern times.
Oh, man. Well, tell us, give us the kind of the bones of the story, the background.
Yeah. It's a book about three children who are siblings, and they travel to England to stay with their aunt, and they encounter a bit of a ghost problem in the town, and they have to race to solve the mystery before the ghost takes something that doesn't belong to them.
Yeah, and I finished the book last week. I have to say, I enjoyed reading the book. I mean, it was a lot of fun for me, The action arc at the end was particularly engaging for an adult like mice. Maybe not every adult, but certainly one like me anyway, enjoyed it.
Well, good. Thank you. A lot of adults have said they've enjoyed it. And the kids are starting to reread the book, which is such a compliment because you only reread your absolute favorite books when you're a child. And there's another character I didn't mention, a giant Newfoundland dog. And
yes,
the kids adore the dog. So,
yeah.
so don't
Ben?
Let the fish out of the – the cat out of the bag.
Oh, man. So the main characters, we got Meg, we got Will, and Ariel.
Yes.
How'd you come on Ariel?
Oh, well, Ariel's name came because at the time, and I was writing this book really at the same time I was writing my other three books. I was writing this in the early morning. But we had a babysitter come to our house so that it's very hard to write books if you're raising young children. You know, you need to concentrate. And so I had a babysitter come, and one of the babysitter's name was Ariel. And so that's how I picked up that name for the book.
Oh, okay. Well, talk a little bit more about those characters, those three.
Well, they're the two oldest are they're buddies. They're always together, and they leave out the little one a little bit. The youngest child, Ariel, who's the one that the ghosts befriend, she doesn't realize that her new playmate is actually a ghost. But they're both lonely, and so they play together. And the older two are so preoccupied with their own explorations and figuring out some mysteries, they don't even notice that their little sister is making friends with a ghost. But it's also about being aware of the people around you. So Will and Meg, who are very close in age and not always including the younger sister, by the end of the book, they realize how much they need to be aware of her and include her more and be part of the family. There's a part of the book that's about looking at the people around you, including the ghosts that might be around you and what their needs and their feelings might be.
So were you, I was trying to think of now, why did she come up with this ghost idea in the first place? Where did you have an interest as a kid in ghosts or what?
No, not at all. You know, this book, I was told that many children's book authors say that a book comes, the idea for the book comes from a feeling, not from a plot idea, but from a feeling. And that's how this book started for me. So I was in a period of life where I was grieving. I'd actually had a miscarriage, and I was grieving so deeply. And I was out cross-country skiing, which for me is part of my writing routine. I have to move my body. I take long walks, and I go cross-country skiing a lot. And when I was out skiing that day during a time of deep grief, I thought that my feelings were so sad that they would outlive me. And that they'd swirl around the world, these feelings of grief that I had, and outlive my own body. And at that moment, my writer brain kicked in, and I said, oh, my gosh, that's what a ghost is. That's why, I mean, I'm not a believer of ghosts, but for fiction, I totally am. They're very useful as characters. And so I thought, oh, my gosh, that's what a ghost is. It's a bundle of feelings that are so intense that the feelings live on after the person has died. And at that moment, the entire entire idea of the book, the three children, the well scene, the giant Newfoundland dog, and the ghosts all came into my mind during that one ski. And by the end of the ski, I had the idea for the book pretty well mapped out.
Did you sit right down and start writing?
Well, I still had a job and children and all those things. What I did is I started setting my alarm for 5 a.m. because I was writing It's Okay Not to Share during the daytime. And that's what I was paying the babysitters for, to write that, because I had a book contract for that. So I had to figure out a time in the day, like a crack of time that I could use. And at first I tried to do it at night once the dishes were washed and the kids were in bed and I was tired. And that did not work. I fell asleep night after night. And then I thought, okay, I'll just go to bed at 9 and get up at 5. And so I had, for an entire year, I got up at 5 to write this book.
Oh, our guest today, Heather Shoemaker, she's written a number of books, as we've been talking about. Her latest is directed at children, and it's titled The Griffins of Castle Cary, and we're going to be spending some more time talking with her. We'll take a quick look at the news and weather, and then we'll be back. You stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Zeroing in on a little mystery today here on the Ideas Network. Had a lot of fun the last hour talking with now our second mystery author, Heather Shoemaker. She began writing books in elementary school. You really did.
I began writing books before I could read or write. I dictated my stories to a willing adult, and then I would draw the pictures. And they were little paperbacks, you know, paper with staples. But then once in a while, they would publish them in hardback, which meant we did cardboard covers. My very first book was Leo the Lion. Nothing happened. There was no character development and no plot. He just got up, played, and went to bed. But it was a wonderful first book, and I was so proud.
Danielle Hanna, who was on just ahead of you, also started writing as a little kid. What is it about you writers?
I think all children have stories they want to tell, and sometimes we squish out their voice. So I've noticed I have kids myself, and sometimes the teachers are wanting, they have to follow a curriculum that says you must tell a realistic story, something about your own life. And especially with first graders and second graders and all that young kids, they just want to talk about unicorns or other planets, or they just want to tell their ideas. And sometimes we snuff out that voice. And now I'm teaching for adults. I'm teaching writing classes. And the elusive thing that all the editors are looking for is voice, you know, that distinctive way that you are the only one that can tell that story and the ideas you come up with. So sometimes we have to rekindle that in the adults who are writing.
So talk some more, because you're teaching right now on...
Yeah,
Madison.
That's why I'm here in Madison, is I'm teaching for the UW Extension, Right by the Lake, which is an annual writing retreat right on Lake Mendota. I love teaching at writing conferences and sharing my publishing and writing craft with other people, because I love watching new books and ideas sort of start to be shaped.
Well, that's got to be a lot of fun. And I think for somebody who wants to be a writer... And been maybe thinking about this one book for a long, long time. Something like this would be ideal.
Yes. Well, I started writing books before I could read or write as a child. But once I got serious about trying to publish my books, I started off by going to writing conferences also. And I highly recommend that for people who want to write a book, because there's the business of writing, but then there's also the business of learning the publishing industry. And most of us don't know anything about that to start. And so if you go to a writing conference like the ones that UW-Madison hosts, then you can learn all you need to know. And that's how I got started. And in fact, I've hired some of the editors here through UW Extension to work with me on Saving Arcadia and some of the other books.
And you worked on Cab. You were a student and actually had an office in Old Science Hall.
That's right. Yeah, I went to graduate school here in Madison, and I was in environmental studies student, so I was in Science Hall. But to pay my way through graduate school, I got a job writing for Earthwatch Radio, which aired for a number of years. Mm-hmm. And my office I was given was down deep in the basement of Science Hall. And the lady who gave me the key to my writing office said, "This used to be the morgue for the medical school. Have a good night." And then she left, and I was alone down there in the morgue. So I think that's where some of my ideas came from, too, writing in the morgue.
Well, there are a lot of ghost stories connected with Science Hall as well, but that didn't have any impact on your book.
No, the Griffins of Castle Cary ghosts, they came to me many years later. I don't think there's any connection with the reported ghosts in Science Hall.
How do you want to portray the adults in this story?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I've found that adult readers, which has mostly been parents, grandparents, children's librarians, teachers, those tend to be the adults who read this book, they have said they appreciate that the adults they do have to get out of the way so the children can have the adventure, but the adults are seen as caring and not completely hapless or clueless the way sometimes adults are portrayed in a children's book.
So, that always drove me crazy, and I thought, well, they can't be that stupid, and that's really, that is not the case in your book.
Well, thank you. I wanted to have them be caring, but you do, this is a trouble with children's books, is you want the children to have enough independence to have their own adventure and actually be the ones to figure out the mystery. And if you're 10 years old or 11 years old, you have adults hovering around, particularly parents. So as an author, you have a challenge. You have to get rid of the parents. Now, in my book, I sent them off to a geology conference right at the beginning. So they have to go stay with an aunt. And, you know, aunts and uncles, they love their nieces and nephews, but they're not quite the same as parents. So there's a little more flexibility there. And then, as you mentioned, the book's set in England, and there's a little more latitude there, even in the modern day, about kids taking public transit to get to school or taking walks by themselves. If I'd done it in this country, set the book in this country, the police would have been called to say there was a child crossing the street by herself, and they couldn't solve the mystery. So I found a way to kind of get rid of the caring adults somewhat, so that they can have their own adventure.
Heather Shoemaker, our guest today, she is the author of The Griffins of Castle Cary, and it's a wonderful read, actually. I really enjoyed it, and I hope you'll join in with your own questions, perhaps about the book or about writing, and I haven't given the number in 15 minutes, so let me do it again here now. It's 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. 1234. Give us a call with your questions or comments. Or also, you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. Ideas@wpr.org. Your descriptions are pretty detailed and real. And I'm wondering if you were concerned that some of the events might be too scary for readers.
Well, that's always something you have to keep your audience age in mind. There's a variety of children who love a little bit of spookiness. They don't want to be scared. They like that spookiness. And I was aiming for a suspenseful story that has a lot of page-turning action, especially the second half of the book. One of the editors in New York suggested I take out a sentence or two that might be too scary for the kids in one scene where there's a well. We kept it in because I felt it was appropriate. And one little 9-year-old boy came up to me at an author event recently. And he said, "My favorite part of the book is when they find a bone in the well. I love spooky." So, you know, it's to personal taste. It's not meant to terrify children. It's meant to give them a little bit of edge of excitement, but keep it very much in the middle grade range of books. There's no kissing and there's no total scary stuff. It's very appropriate for young children, sort of 7 to 12 years old.
Yeah, I think that's right. And Simon and Schuster are the publishers, right?
That's right, yeah.
So you've got a nice publishing house.
Oh, they're wonderful. And I got to tour their studios. They're covered with books all over the place.
Well, you wrote in your a blog on your website about girls reading stories that are typically about both boys and girls, whereas boys tend to read stories where the boys are the main character.
Yeah, that lingers
on. Talk about that.
Well, you know, growing up as a female reader, I would read any sort of book. If it was all about boys, I would read it. If it was all about girls, I'd read it. If there were a mix of characters. And I noticed that boy readers are often quite reluctant to read a book where a girl is the main character. And so often, and I have two boys of my own, and they definitely have to be prodded heavily to read a book where it's only girls or a girl main character. If there's a mix, and that's what I did in this book, I have a boy and girl as the sort of main characters and then a younger sister. So there's a mix of boys and girls. It is interesting to me. I think as adults who care about young people, we need to give those boys a little bit of a prod and say, this book is really interesting, because they will get into the story if there's a girl main character, but they won't necessarily pick up the book by themselves. They might need an adult to read it to them or encourage them to read it.
Do you think this has any effect on kids as they then become adults?
I do. I think it has a lot to do with understanding other people and empathy. Some of the ideas I talk about in my early childhood books, It's Okay Not to Share and so on. It's an important part of moral development for any human is to understand what it's like to be somebody else, understand what it's like from their perspective. And I think girls, on the whole, because it's somewhat still a man's world, are very used to learning about the man's or the boy's point of view. And boys, young boys, still are not learning as much about what it is like to be female.
And even in your own home, where you are so attuned to that, there's got to be something more going on with boys.
Well, and I think sometimes if you get, and this is for a little bit older readers, but The Hunger Games is a book that maybe a lot of teenagers enjoy, has a very strong female lead.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of action in the book. So sometimes a boy might get more interested in a book if the female character is not say doing boy things, but having enough action and adventure to satisfy that need. And not every book has to be adventure. Some of them can be quieter books.
Yeah. Well, just to take this an inch further, how do parents and grandparents help boys be more open to all kinds of stories?
Well, part of that gets into with boy readers, often they learn to read, say, by, you know, second, third grade. And right about fourth grade, boys stop reading for pleasure. So girls tend to read more for pleasure throughout their life, and boys, once they've learned to read, they almost, not completely, but some boys will stop reading for pleasure. And that's something not just about whether the main characters are boys or girls, but just about boy reading habits. One thing I've found that's terrific to encourage boys to read books at all and to read a variety of books is a program called Battle of the Books. And in many, many states, they have school districts or libraries that host this, and it's a competition. So each team reads 6 to 10 books, and it's a variety of titles. So you might try one that's a biography. You might try one that's a graphic novel. You might try one that's a girl character. And the whole team reads all the books, and then they compete in a contest to see who knows all the answers. And so it gets like a sports competitiveness to it, and it really gets all the kids excited, but it draws in boys who might not otherwise be reading that range of books or those books.
So that competition factor. I was trying to think of my own life, and as a young guy, I love to read for pleasure. And so I read and read and I read every book in our school library, I mm-hmm. think. And now I do the same thing. But there is something to what you just said, because there are times, and I interview quite a few authors, and occasionally Jill will give me a book and an author, and I'm not so sure about this one. But we'll have the guest on, and then I'll read the book, and I think, man, am I glad I read this book, because it was just a little out of what I'm kind of normally, what I might right. normally read.
Right. And this age group for children, sort of 8 to 12, they often get, they find a type of book they like. Like they like Westerns, or they like science fiction, or they like something, and they're very loath to take a step into a different kind of book. So I think adults who care about young readers need to introduce a variety of stories, because just like you, they'll discover, oh, I never would have picked this up, but this is interesting.
Yeah. So what books did you like when you were growing up?
Oh, my goodness. I read I feasted on books and I read such a variety. But I did like, I was more like a boy reader. I enjoyed the adventure ones, the ones with mystery, the ones with suspense. And I think that's why my first book for children is one that's such a page-turning mystery, because that's what I loved as a child.
Yeah, I can. I always loved those adventure books. I really enjoyed them. And this is quite an adventure. Can we talk just a touch more about the book itself?
Absolutely. Yeah, so the idea for the book, besides the ghosts, there's a well in the book that's very important in the scenes, and it's an abandoned well. And I got the idea for that because when I was living in England, there was a news story about an abandoned well and a child falling in it. And the child actually got stuck in the well. And so I was riveted by this as a child myself, and I put that idea in the book. So there's a lot of daring rescue scenes and how the kids are going to get the ghosts from trying to steal their sister. And some of it has to do with facing fears and all kinds of rescue attempts, including stampeding sheep, motorcycle escapes, outwitting the doctors in a hospital. There's a whole range of, there's some comic scenes, and I put those in intentionally to, if kids might be getting too scared, making it a little more funny so that they can relax. And I also had child test readers. All of my books I put through two writing critique groups, but then I also put it out to readers. So I had children's librarians read this book as a manuscript before it was published. I had parents and teachers read it, but I had about 10 kids around the country read it and tell me what they thought. And one of them wanted the climax changed, and her idea was so good that I actually changed the climax and incorporated this 9-year-old's idea. And then several of them wanted a little more funny at the spooky parts. And so I added more humor. And that I just think if you're writing for that audience, you need to ask them what they think before you finalize the book.
What a great idea. Well, you have to have some resources to do that, though, don't you? Or did you just...
Oh, I just asked families. And in fact, I found these British test readers by posting in Facebook in England to find some people who would read a manuscript from that part of the country so I could get very authentic words. I got the term little maid, which is a Somerset term for a young girl, you know, just getting the exact language because there's so many different words that you could use even within one country.
So now are you planning to continue on with children's books?
Oh, yes. I love writing for children. I'm currently writing two books for children. One is a sequel to The Griffins called The Griffins and the Wild Hunt. So the same characters come back to a new mystery. And then the second one is a pirate adventure, a historical fiction about female pirates in the 1700s.
So you're staying with the adventure for sure.
I love adventure, yes. And since this is Mystery Hour, I'm actually appearing at Mystery to Me Bookstore Wednesday this week, the 19th at 7, so people can come and meet me and ask me more questions about mystery books and next books and so on.
What do you like about and you've done a fair amount of touring.
I have. I speak now around the country and in Canada, and I was primarily, this has been for my early education books, It's Okay Not to Share, and I was just invited to speak in Hong Kong for my books. So I'm taking the Griffins of Castle Cary to Hong Kong also because it's an international school and they have a preschool, but they also have an elementary school and a high school, so I'm bringing my books to talk to those kids. And I'm doing school visits now and library visits with kids, and I just love a whole room full of fourth or fifth graders or even sixth and seventh graders. They have fascinating questions and they get so excited about the books.
Do you read then for them? How does that work?
I do an interactive program. I have props. They come up and read with me. I give them the microphone sometimes. I have a story cape where they pluck off story ideas from my cape and I tell them where the ideas from the book came. I dress them up in British bobby hats and they do a little skit. And then my favorite part is I needed so much encouragement as an aspiring author myself. And so it was hard for me to believe I could become an author. Authors seemed like these semi-mythical beings mm-hmm. as a kid. And so I really want to inspire the young authors out there. So I tell them a story about how when I was a child, my dad went off to, he was a university professor, he'd go off to a conference and come back with one of those name tag badges that said speaker. But one time he came back with one that said author, because he'd authored a paper. And I asked him if I could have that author ribbon. And he gave it to me. I put it on my door. And I took it with me even when I came to graduate school. I always had it next to my computer. And so what I've done is I tell them that story. I show them that original ribbon from the 1970s that I've kept. And then I've made up a whole bunch of author ribbons that I've printed, and I give them out to anybody who wants to be an author. And the kids just, all the seats empty, and they come and mob me, and they hold up their author ribbons. And it's so uplifting, because I want their stories to be heard too. And everybody needs a lot of encouragement, because it's hard to write a book. And you need, sometimes just having that author ribbon looking back at you, you realize, I can do this.
As you were talking, I was thinking back to a few weeks back when we were able to do a live show from Mineral Point Middle School there, and talk with and answer questions from the fourth grade class of Mineral Point. And it was such an uplifting experience to be with these kids who were so excited to have ask their questions and have them answered. It was so uplifting. I thought, man, I'm going to do this some more.
Mm.
I can see why you enjoy doing that. And you do a fair amount of that.
I do a lot of school visits, and also this Battle of the Books programs that I mentioned. The Griffins of Castlecary has been chosen to be one of the books for a battle team, for example. And there's other battle teams that are considering it for their next season, their next competition season. So that's fun, because one of the things with the battles is that they invite a certain author to come and sort of be the prize at the end and do a big assembly. And I just love that. I'm going to be doing that coming up here too.
Oh, my gosh. How's the book doing? How's the Griffins of Castlecary doing?
It's doing great, and it's going to be coming out in paperback in the spring. Right now, it's a hardcover.
Great cover, by the way.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah. Children have been writing to one little girl, and she wrote to me, and she said this was her favorite book she'd read all year. And this is not just any kid, because she reads voraciously. And I know some of the books, since she was on the Battle of the Books team, I know some of the books that she's read, and they're extremely good. So I was honored by that comment. You know, these kids are quite connoisseurs of literature, some of them. They know a lot more about some of the wonderful ideas that can be in books than some adult readers.
This has been a lot of fun, Heather, and I'm looking forward to having a chance to talk with you again. Maybe that next book comes out, we'll get back together.
All right. It's been good to be back. Thanks, Larry.
Heather Shoemaker, our guest, and the title of her children's book is The Griffins of Castlecary. And I have a family, a Griffin family, that I'm good friends with, and I've got 5 kids, and so I'm going to pass this on right to them.
Oh, perfect.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening, and please stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.